Director of Intergovernmental Relations, to convey Milwaukee County's official opposition to the rule currently under consideration by the Wisconsin Supreme Court that will allow circuit court judges to appoint publicly funded legal counsel to indigent persons in civil cases.
Thank you. I was going to have Mr. De La Rosa summarize this. Mr. Katie, could you see if he's available to step down? We're on number one. Mr. De La Rosa, could you summarize that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The Supreme Court resolution allowing the circuit court judges to appoint publicly funded legal counsel to indigent persons in civil cases.
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, the Supreme Court has been petitioned to implement a rule that, in effect, would require indigent representation in civil cases. Your resolution is pretty straightforward in light of what we've identified as a mandate. Well, this is a very lofty goal in attempting to provide legal counsel. The fiscal resources are not provided. And quite frankly, given the legislature, we are not looking for a friendly ear as far as getting any kind of financial assistance to this group. Mr. Barrett or Mr. Smith, if they're looking around, should be here shortly. We have a letter of opposition from the Supreme Court Association on this issue, and this is reinforced by your
thank you, Mr. Rosa.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment on the
thank you, Mr. Katie.
On the fiscal impact.
Okay.
The petitioners had estimated that the statewide fiscal impact would be approximately $56 million per year. Our court administrative staff has estimated that while they don't know the exact impact in Milwaukee County, they used a figure of approximately 20%, which was $11.2 million per year.
Yes, that is in the resolution on the whereas clauses. Thank you, Mr. Katie. Before I go to any comments in the committee, I know Mr. Barrett would like to say something, although we have in front of us the information that our court is talking about the hardship it would cause to our budget. We have a couple of speakers from the public, Mr. Thomas Cannon, Mr. John Ebbett. Do you want to come up together, or are you going to go individually? Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, well, we'll hold you in abeyance. Thank you very much, okay?
We were in the midst of a personnel crisis. I'm sorry.
Wow. Introduce yourself, please, for those
My name is John Barrett, and I am the clerk of circuit court for Milwaukee County.
And we are on number one, Mr. Barrett. You sent us some information on this, if you could clarify or summarize that for us.
Sure. Assisted with the clerks of court in drafting this letter with respect to the concerns that not only I as clerk of court but clerks throughout the state have with respect to the civil Gideon. And the civil Gideon, the problem with the civil Gideon and what it is in the criminal area, there was a lawsuit involving a gentleman by the name of Gideon. And Gideon sued saying that constitutionally he had a right to representation in matters in which he faced incarceration. And the Supreme Court agreed with that and said, yes, Mr. Gideon and all others who are similarly situated have a right to counsel if they are indigent and face the possibility of incarceration. What the proposal is before the Supreme Court now is that individuals without means would be given the opportunity to have representation in cases, in civil cases, as opposed to in criminal cases. So an individual would be entitled to the right to counsel in these matters. And so it is something that is, as far as the goal of giving representation and having individuals have representation in an equal manner is a marvelous goal. It is something that we should all, you know, that it would, if people were on equal footing in the courts, that would be a wonderful thing. The problem with it is that it's a huge bill. It is at the state level. It's the petitioners in this case have approximated it to be about $56 million. Now, the proposal that's there right now is a proposal to take the funding out of the fees that are paid to the courts, which now go to the general purpose revenues. So the money would be paid for by the state, theoretically. The only problem that I have with that is that the likelihood of the state continuing to provide that funding, if they in fact were to provide it right away, I think is virtually slim and none. And that ultimately, if they decided to say yes, all individuals are entitled to representation, I would think that the cost of that would likely fall on us. And that ultimately what would happen is that $11 million, and we're just guessing, it's $56 million was their guess, which may be an underestimate, and we estimate that we're roughly 20% of that cost. And so if it's $11 million, it would be $11 million in our budget. Right now, we pay lawyers to the tune of about $6 million. And so that's for representation of children and others, generally guardian ad litems. Sometimes there are dean cases, which are cases in which the public defender has found an individual not indigent, but a state judge still finds that the individual is in fact indigent, and therefore the county has to pick up the tab in those cases, although that there's been a change in the law in that area. So we're hoping that that goes down quite a bit. But the real problem with this is the funding. And if the funding does come from the state, that would be terrific. But my fear is that ultimately it would land on our shoulders, and that would be problematic for us.
Excuse me.
Supervisor Holloway, please.
I think it's more than just a problem, because what's happening is that the only people are being covered would be the rich and the poor. The lower middle-class people who don't have dollars to expend on any legal fees or whatever are not being covered again. They're the ones who will be punished even more so, because the fact is that they have no money, extra money to pay on legal fees and what have you. That means the only body has protection for legal fees are the extreme poor and the extreme rich. I'm opposed to that. I think that we have to start looking at the lower middle class, the working class people who are not covered at all under those circumstances. So I'm opposed to it for two reasons. First thing, I think it is not feasible from a cash perspective that we can afford it. The second reason that I'm opposed to it is because it doesn't protect the working poor. And that's enough for me.
Thank you, Supervisor. Any other comments from the committee? Supervisor DeBrun?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'm a little confused as to how this relates to it. I thought, and I think it's mentioned on the top paragraph of the second page, I thought legal aid and legal action are paid to represent these individuals in civil matters. Is that not the current? I mean, obviously they can't. It might not meet the demand, but isn't that the vehicle that the state has provided so far?
There was some funding provided to them that was cut back under the current administration, but they don't get all of their funding that way, and this would be this would expand the numbers of individuals who would be provided representation.
Would the vehicle then still be all these individuals going through legal aid or legal action, or would they be able to independently with other attorneys sue?
I think it would be
or respond to suits.
I think that that's part of the detail that would be. I'm assuming that I think it's is it John Abbott who is He is the petitioner in this case, and he would be the individual who would better be able to answer that question for you.
Okay. I also have a legal question for our court counsel, too. So why don't we, whichever order you want to do it, Mr. Chair.
So if you have court counsel, why don't court counsel come up?
Yes.
Our corporation counsel?
Yeah.
The president of the room has a question, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Introduce, please.
Mark Grady, deputy corporation counsel.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Grady. Right now, legal aid and legal action, if they are representing clients, they can sue Milwaukee County on behalf of those clients. How does this funding impact that scenario, or does it not impact it at all?
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, to be honest with you, I haven't read the proposal, so I don't know if there are any particular limitations set forth in it. If there are none, then the counsel provided to these individuals would, I assume, be able to do both things, sue and be sued, or, you know, prosecute cases and defend cases. You're going to hear from the petitioner, so I'll leave it to him to set forth the reasons why this has been put forward. But I expect that there's a lot of details yet to be worked out if this moves forward. One of those will be, are we going to create a body like the state public defenders? I mean, we have the state public defenders, but they do criminal work. So you've got a pool from which the court draws the representation. There's no currently similar body. I mean, we have legal action and legal aid, but they're really not like the public defender's office. It doesn't work the same way. They have a much smaller staff, much smaller fraction of representation of cases. And so I don't know what the intention is with respect to creating a pool of civil lawyers to do this kind of representation, or if the court is going to individually just pick from a list the court has, which may be what they, you know, each judge will just have a list of, you know, a couple dozen names or whatever it is. So I think that's a detail yet to be worked out, along with the question that you asked, Supervisor.
But right now, the vehicle or one of the vehicles they have is that they can sue counties and, I believe, municipalities or whatever on behalf of individuals who they feel have been harmed by actions of government. And it's civil as well, correct? It's not just, I mean, most of the lawsuits that I'm aware of have been more, wouldn't they be classified as civil versus?
Yes.
Okay. So this would be the state dramatically expanding the coverage in that area as well, the ability then. Correct. Whereas right now, individual citizens could sue a county or a city or the state on their own. Correct.
Again, unless I haven't seen the actual petition, so unless there's some specific reference in the petition to a limitation on that, in the absence of that, I would assume they'd have all the rights that they would need, because there are situations where an individual needs to be able to sue, whether it's a governmental right. agency or a private agency, and there's obviously situations I think it's primarily designed for is to defend themselves, you know, child custody cases, for example, very, very difficult cases, very important liberty interests involved of the children, yet there's no representation often for either side. And so one party is the petitioner in a divorce and one party is mm-hmm. the respondent. And so, you know, this might be one area where they're going to be providing representation to the person who sues, is the plaintiff, is the petitioner. As an example, and again, I don't even know if that's what this applies to, but it might. So, okay. In answer to your question, I think I don't know, but it certainly, as this moves forward, if that's something we're interested in pursuing on behalf of the county, we could certainly pursue that. This will, I'm sure, be the subject of more than one hearing before the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Okay. Well, the be it resolved clause in the resolution says that we would oppose it on this change on the court judges appointing publicly funded legal counsel to indigent persons civil cases unless the state pays all related costs. And I guess part of the question I'm having is whether or not that should be the only restriction or not. But okay, then perhaps we'll hear from the petitioners.
Yeah, I mean, it might be appropriate if this does move beyond the initial phases to add either today or at a future date another resolution that if you do this system, we'd still oppose any funding going to class action lawsuits against governmental entities, for example. But I think that's a little farther down the road.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, Supervisor?
Yep, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, let's bring up, thank you, Mr. Grady, Mr. Barrett. Mr. Cannon is from the Legal Aid Society. Mr. Evett is from the Legal Action of Wisconsin, so we can hear from you, gentlemen. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for allowing us to speak this morning. The Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee has been in the community for 95 years. Our mission has been equal justice for the poor. We have provided free legal counsel to low-income residents of Milwaukee County for the last 95 years in civil cases. And I think the maybe best place to start is the State Bar of Wisconsin study of the legal needs of indigents, the underserved elements of the community. That study was done in 2007, and it found that statewide, nearly 700,000 people are so poor in Wisconsin, that is below the federal poverty guidelines, that they cannot afford to hire legal counsel to represent them in things such as a child custody case or other types of civil cases. The study also found that somewhere between the current legal aid providers, which would be Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee, Legal Action of Wisconsin, Catholic Charities, some of the other programs, are only able to represent between 5% and 15% of the eligible poor because these programs are all underfunded. And as one of the previous speakers mentioned, when you compare our resources to, say, the state public defender who represents poor people in criminal cases, there's just a vast disparity in the size of the offices. So what this resolution really tries to address is to make our public system of justice and of dispute resolution available to all the citizens in the state of Wisconsin and, of course, all the citizens of Milwaukee County who right now are being disabled by their poverty from having meaningful access to the system. They can't have their voices heard in the court system because they can't afford to hire a lawyer to articulate their needs. And in Milwaukee, for example, there are 127,000 people who are functionally illiterate, which means they cannot even fill out a simple job application. And because of that, they cannot defend themselves if they are sued in any kind of a civil lawsuit. So they need to be have access to counsel so that their voices can be heard in the court system. A mention was also made by one of the previous speakers that the state did fund civil legal aid for the poor in the last biennium to the tune of $2.5 million a year. But in January of this year, the new governor eliminated that budget item completely. So it went from $2.5 million in state funding down to zero. What I would ask the committee to consider respectfully is supporting this resolution in the Supreme Court on the principled grounds that it makes our public system of justice available to all of the public in the state of Wisconsin, and to perhaps either condition that support on or just make it clear that the county would support this petition only if the state assumes the funding for it. As I know you're well aware, the court system is theoretically a state court system, and the state has, over the years, absorbed the cost of the public defender program, which provides free legal counsel in criminal cases, and it would certainly be appropriate for the state to assume the cost of providing legal counsel to the poor in civil cases as well. There's really no justification for saying the county should be on the hook in civil cases while the state picks up the costs in state in criminal cases. It should be the same, and we certainly wouldn't have any objection to the state picking up that cost, and in fact, the petition more or less says that the state should be the primary financer of this program. So I would ask the committee respectfully to consider supporting this petition in the Supreme Court, conditionally at least, with the condition or caveat that the state assume the funding of providing free counsel in civil cases to the poor, just as they now provide free counsel in criminal cases to the poor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ebbett, do you want to comment too?
Yes, thank you.
And introduce yourself again, please.
Sure. I'm John Ebbett. I'm Executive Director of Legal Action of Wisconsin. We are a companion law firm in Milwaukee to the Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee, and we attempt to cover 39 counties in the southern half of Wisconsin, so we're not just in Milwaukee, and I appreciate the opportunity to make some remarks here this morning.
Mr. Ebbett, I apologize, but Mr. Cannon, would you mind, for the records, mentioning your title to them? Because they heard you speak, but they didn't get your name, I guess.
Sure. Tom Cannon, Executive Director, Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee.
Thank you. Mr. Ebbett.
I just have a number of comments to try to make clear what the petition does and what some of the facts are. First of all, we have the slogan, Equal Justice Under Law, on our Supreme Court building. And that is supposed to be one of the fundamental principles on which this country operates. And we don't have equal justice under law at this point, and this is an attempt to work toward that goal. First of all, I'd point out that the courts now have the inherent power to appoint counsel in civil cases. What Mr. Barrett said is true. There's a constitutional provision in the federal constitution that grants the right to counsel to criminal defendants, and that's what was developed in the Gideon versus Wainwright case. But in Wisconsin, the circuit courts have the inherent power to appoint counsel, so they could do it now. One of the problems is they never do it, and I suspect that's because they're watching the county treasurer, so they don't do it. And what this petition and rule does is say where there are very critical interests at stake, like are you going to be homeless? Are you going to lose your child? Are you going to lose your health care? Very critical cases where there are very critical interests, the court must appoint, once the court looks at the litigant to see, well, does the litigant have a fourth grade education? Is the litigant mentally ill? Is the case extremely complex? If it's simple, the court would not have to appoint. So it gives some guidelines to the circuit courts as to when to appoint, and it does say that they must appoint when there are these critical interests at stake and when the litigant is basically not competent to pursue the case him or herself. This rule would not affect all civil cases where people are below 200% of poverty in Wisconsin. This rule primarily is going to affect defendants or respondents, people who have been hailed into court. It's not their idea. They're forced to be in court. It's only going to affect people that actually are in court and in front of the judge, because that's when the judge has the opportunity under the rule and the duty under the rule to appoint counsel. So there are going to be a lot of people out in society who may have good causes of action, good reasons to sue, who won't get counsel appointed for them because they're not in court. If they can't get in court, this rule doesn't come into effect. The language in the last whereas of the resolution speaks of transferring the obligation. There are alternate resources, Legal Aid Society and Legal Action, that currently serve that population, and transferring the obligation to fund that service. This is not a transfer of our obligation to fund this service to the county. First of all, the alternate resources that there are, the two of us, are not, as Tom said, they're not nearly adequate to meet the entire need. So this doesn't, this does not transfer, we would not stop representing low-income people if this rule came into effect. It would not, we would not be relieved of any obligation or any responsibility. This promotes equal justice under law because it makes more attorneys available to people below 200% of poverty. I just note that the estimated cost is $11.2 million. I'd note that a 16% reduction in the county's inmate population in 2008 brought about an $11 million savings in 2010. So there are things that can be done to promote equal justice under law. As I understand it, the union concessions that were made are saving the county $322,000 per month. So I understand that things are tight for every county, and we think that the state should fund it. But I'm just saying that there may be ways. Some counties spend $1 million on their fairgrounds. There may be ways that the counties can work to provide the financial foundation for this. Another point is that people in court are not, sometimes this is expressed in terms of people being entitled to a right to counsel. People in court under this rule will not be entitled, and there is no right to counsel. It's completely discretionary with the circuit court. So no litigant can come into court and say, Your Honor, I am entitled to a right to counsel in this case. So I think that's significant. There was a question raised as to how is this going to be done. Will it go through Legal Aid Society and legal action, or will other attorneys be appointed? There's nothing in the rule, one, that says that all of these come through Legal Aid Society or Legal Action of Wisconsin. So and I don't think that they will, and so this is not some end run for us to get more funding. The idea of this is to make it as least bureaucratic as possible. It won't require the establishment of a new bureaucracy to handle this. It's supposed to be as efficient and effective as possible. The litigant is in court. The judge says, I've got this rule. I need to appoint. I either don't need to appoint or I do need to appoint an attorney for this person. I'm going to appoint this attorney, and the person is represented, or Mr. Litigant, I'm not going to appoint an attorney, and the person's not represented. It doesn't require a new state agency. And the rule doesn't say that all of these things are going to come through legal aid or legal action. In terms of the chairman's concern about the lower middle class, that's one reason that we made the eligibility 200% of poverty or below. It's not the poverty level, it's double the poverty level. Our income eligibility, I think, our eligibility is 125% of poverty. So this is above what our income eligibility is, and we were concerned about making it 200% of poverty because, of course, everyone's going to say, well, then it's, you know, that's that many more people. It's going to be much more expensive then. That's true. But we think the poverty level is, the federal poverty level does not capture all poverty. We think it's too low to capture all poverty, and we know that there are a lot of working families out there, sometimes two wage earners, that can't afford attorneys. And so, you know, the best we could do is to make it 200% of poverty, and it does capture some of those families. If we made it 400% of poverty, we'd capture more of those. So there is an attempt to serve that need, Mr. Chairman. And in terms of the ability to sue Milwaukee County, this is not going to really expand the ability to sue Milwaukee County or other counties. As I said, it's primarily going to affect people who are in court as defendants or respondents. We will still hopefully have some funding to represent people who have genuine causes of action, who have legitimate reasons to sue, and sometimes that is suing the county. So legal aid and legal action and maybe some of the other providers in Milwaukee will still have that capacity and will still do that. I would be shocked if there was an attorney appointed under this rule that would then bring a class action against Milwaukee County. I just don't think that's going to those kinds of that type of litigation, those kinds of things, including appeals, are going to be handled in other ways, like through us. The State Bar has a pro bono appellate division, so that committee could handle appeals. So this rule is not going to spawn a great number of lawsuits against Milwaukee County. I am pleased to see in the resolution portion paragraph the phrase, unless the state pays all related costs. The proposal in the supporting memoranda for this rule petition don't say that the state has to pay first. The obligation is clearly on the county to pay initially, but the state should be paying more and more of this. And there's the court support services surcharge. It's collected from the counties. Probably many of you are familiar with this. Collected from the counties because of the court activity in the county. There are filing fees, and then there are surcharges on top of filing fees. And the one that generates the most revenue is the court support services surcharge. The counties get back between 35 and 50% of what they pay into the state. So, and that surcharge was enacted to help the counties pay for their court activity. But the state essentially skims over half of it. The total last time was $53 million generated across the state, and only about $23 million came back to the counties. So we have this in our supporting memorandum because the counties can look to that, and the counties can go to the legislature and say, this is supposed to help us support our court activity, and you're keeping over half of it. So we included that to show that there are some pools of money that can be looked to at the state level to help the counties with this burden. And lastly, what I'd say is, if you look at the greater scheme of things, and I know this doesn't really help the 11.2 million that the county has estimated, but this amount of money, the 56 million, and I'd stress this 56 million is just a rough guess. It's extremely difficult to really approximate the cost of this, but 56 million is less than 0.2% of the state all funds budget. So if the amount were double what we estimated, it would be less than 0.4% of the state all funds budget. And the state is going to say, well, all our money is committed. I understand that that's what they're going to say. But still, the counties can go to the state, and this is not a huge amount. It's about 1.5% of the state administrative overhead that they spend. They increased their private professional services and safety amount 381% in the last budget. So it's not that there's no money there at the state level. And we have told Tom and I went to the Wisconsin Counties Association and said we will work with you. We'll do what we can if you want to go to the state and try to get funding for this. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. As the maker of the motion, I'm going to pass the mic because I want to speak on this. So I'm passing the gavel to Supervisor Holly. Could I speak to the supervisor?
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. thank you, Chairman. Chairman Holly. Mr. Cady, could you pass this out, please, to everybody? In listening to what you all had to say, and we appreciate all the work both of you do in your respective organizations sincerely. Let's get right down to the be it resolved clause, okay, for the committee members. What I would like to do as the sponsor of the motion, we'll see if the committee agrees, is to kind of change just a couple key words here. It doesn't take away the intent of what I want to do, I'm afraid to say. But if supervisors have this, and Mr. Kate can give you a gentleman a copy too. What it does is try to make this make it more positive. In saying that we oppose the Supreme Court petition, we want to say we do support the Supreme Court petition currently under consideration by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I'm reading here, committee. which will allow circuit court judges to, I know it's up to discretion of circuit court judges, okay, to appoint publicly funded legal counsel to indigent persons in civil cases, provided, so we, not, we had them less before, provided the state pay all related costs. So you said you petitioned WCA, ready their meeting right now. Mr. De La Rosa is going up there after this meeting's over. We have Ms. Bablich up there. We need to prioritize certain things. We can't be doing everything with the legislature, but we've been successful in a couple of areas. And this would be a priority for us because whether it's $11 million, it's $9 million, it's $13 million, it's a significant unfunded mandate we're getting again to Milwaukee County. We cannot afford that, and the state knows that. Joint Finance Committee, I think, understands that, and we're just going to have to do our level-headed best to do it. But I remain committed to this motion and that wording there. So I would ask that we consider, and Chairman Holloway, that we change the wording to be a resolved clause reflected in this. I guess we call an amendment, Mr. Cady. This is, has to be called an amendment, or are we just changing the wording?
It's an amendment.
It would be an amendment.
Yes. amend what we have the, on the being resolved clause right now.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the amendment, Supervisor Cabrera?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's related both to the amendment and the resolution in general. I guess I just want to be a little more blunt about where my concerns are here. There's a recession out there. The county is a $50 million deficit, and we're about ready to get a budget that probably transfers services out of the county instead of consolidating them more regionally, and also makes major cuts. And I guess, you know, it's like we get into county government and we don't remember what it's like to actually be a person living in this community right now, a taxpayer. How do you add, how do we voluntarily add $11 million more cost to Milwaukee County in the middle of a budget crisis, even for this very laudable goal? I don't have a problem with the goal. I don't have a problem with parks funding or mental health funding or other funding that we do. The problem is the pie is only so big. And right now, the way it's currently worded, the 11.2 comes out of the county's our county pocket. And even if there's some tweaking of that, so the state's willing to pick up some more of this, they're not going to pick up 11.2. We'd be lucky if they pick up 2 million of it. So in the end, I think Mr. Barrett's right. If this is adopted, the state pie is not getting bigger. They're shrinking it. That's why the governor cut that $2.5 million of funding to these services earlier, whatever that was, because he wanted to balance his budget. I don't agree with that cut, but the idea that how am I going to explain this to a middle-class constituent who can't afford to go to court themselves, can't afford to hire divorce counsel? I've got people in my district who aren't getting divorced who want to be divorced because they can't afford to get divorced. So it's not that the goal is wrong. It's just that the real practical effect of this is in a time when the county government is in its worst economic situation in the 20 years I've been in office, we're voluntarily saying, let's add a whole new mandate that we know will not be ever funded completely by the state. That's where the crux of it is for me, because I know that in a month from now, or 2 months from now, or 6 months from now, or we will be cutting other services to pay for the services that constituents already get. So that's where my frustration is. It's not at what you're proposing. It's more, you know, the idea of being asked right now to add spending on something that is worthy but a brand new thing is just, I think, to the outside public, won't make a lot of sense. So I'm concerned about the amendment because it actually says now that we'd support it, provided I'll vote for the amendment. But the bottom line is the state's never going to pay for all the costs. They have never done that in the past. They don't pay for all of these costs. The county, under the statutes, we're not even supposed to be paying for the state court system. The state's supposed to be paying. There was a statewide referendum twice where the citizens of this state said the state should completely pay for all those costs. And the state has never listened to that. So you hear the frustration. It's not at what you want to do. I think there's 10 other wonderful things I'd want to do that's new. And I'm just disappointed that, we're kind of put in a political box here because we like the principle, as you said, but the funding of it, is really going to come back to bite us in the butt. So that's my concern with this. The only other piece I wanted to say about the principle, which I do agree with, is, and maybe this is more of a cynical view, I don't think we have equal justice in this country. We don't have it under the law. We don't have it for low-income people. We don't have it for middle-income people because, you know, the system is created by those who have the funds, have the most well-paid and the best attorneys and the best representation, and you know, human beings the way they are, that even the courts treat those individuals differently. So I like the fact that this is an attempt to help make it more equal. I respect that. I'm just I just think that this legislation needed to be geared, constructed in a way from the very beginning that said, from you guys as much as from the rest of us, that said, we wouldn't even be asking for this unless the state pays for it. So I do have one last legal question, which is, if this is adopted, we adopt this resolution, it's where does a director take this resolution to the Supreme Court? And does the Supreme Court have to listen to comments by counties or municipalities about this matter? Because this is a Supreme Court decision, correct? It's not a legislative one. Okay. Okay. So you would take it to that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share Supervisor Bruin's fiscal concerns. I think we all understand the gravity of the circumstances we encounter from the point of view of economics. But I have to balance that against my own depth of experience working public defender cases on behalf of poor clients. And that gave me insight into the workings of money in our judicial system and how, in fact, it skews it and skews it irreparably. What we're being asked here is what price justice, whether it's civil or criminal, really makes little difference to me. If we're to be practical about our democratic values, I think we tread on some pretty thin ice. What costs justice? I mean, that is essentially the question, and certainly compromising our democratic ideals is something we've already done, as exhibited by the system we currently have. This is an attempt to improve that system, and frankly, while I share the fiscal concerns, the philosophical concerns far outweigh it. If we have to reach down and find the money to provide justice, then that's exactly what we should be doing as citizens of this government and as representatives of the people of this community. So I certainly, and with the provision that's been suggested, that all related costs be picked up by the state, regardless how that works itself out as the food chain operates, with that language involved in addressing Mr. Barrett's concerns, I certainly will be supportive of both the amendment and the item.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on this matter? Seeing that, call roll, please.
Mr. Chairman, we're operating under the fact that Mr. Schmidt moved approval of the resolution and then moved approval on the amendment first.
So we're voting on the amendment, right? We're voting on the amendment right now.
Okay. Approval amendment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
On approval of the amendment, Supervisor Schmidt?
Aye.
Borkowski?
Aye.
DeBruin?
Aye.
Roderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
And Mr. Chair?
Aye.
The amendment has been approved, 6-0.
And the resolution has amended, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
On the motion for as amended, Supervisor Schmidt?
Aye.
Borkowski?
Aye.
Bruin?
Aye.
Roderick?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
Aye.
And Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Approved as amended, 6-0.
I'd like to have a question. What's the difference between the two guys?
None.
Thomas will work here.
He has hair.
Sophistication coming with a tie, the other guy comes here cool without one? Or what's the deal?
It's a very good question.
I know I got an award from you guys. I didn't get an award. I didn't get an award from you guys. But since I had you,
you won't get one today.
I want to know what's the difference.
Largely, the difference is that the Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee is locally funded. Legal action is funded largely by the federal government and by the state government. We get a small portion of money from the. We did get a small portion from the state government when before the current governor zeroed out the services to the court. So I would say the main difference is they're federally funded, we're locally funded. They have certain restrictions that they cannot engage in because Congress has imposed some restrictions on their funding, whereas our funding is largely unrestricted.
Okay. And one other question. Is it ever been a case that comes to your office that you turn down?
Yes.
Thousands.
Okay. All right. That's it. Thank you very much.
There's one just last point I'd like to make. The state legal services funding that was cut was not cut to balance the budget. That didn't come out of the budget. It went elsewhere. So it was not a money-saving action. It was transferred into other state budget categories. So it was a deliberate shift from civil legal services for the indigent to other functions. It wasn't a budget balancing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Number two.